talked about how recruiting practices are run, kind of thing?
Yep.
Okay, I was recruited by the Army early when I was a junior.
In high school?
Yes. And I decided not to do that because the current situation in Iraq and all that. But later, I found out that I wouldn't have liked college as much as I probably would have. So I decided to look at the military again. So is what I did is I called the recruiter for the Marine Corps. And I went over and talked with them, and I was fascinated. So I've actually enlisted with the Marine Corps, and I leave actually on this Sunday to go to boot camp.
Well, I guess a little bit of nerves at this moment, Robert?
Yeah, it's nerve-wracking, but on the same time, it's like, you know, I want to get it over with kind of a thing.
Yeah. What went through your mind? I mean, as you said, you reconsidered college and then reconsidered the military, but obviously the risks are still there, the same risks that you considered the first time.
Oh, yeah, they're still there, but, you know, I've grown up a lot since then, and I've realized that, you know, it could happen anywhere, you know?
Get run over by a bus there in Minnetonka.
Yeah, yeah, you know, but I'd rather, you know, die doing something that actually meant something. You know, serve your country, die for your country, you know, made something of yourself kind of a thing.
Robert, this is Rick Stark. Could I ask you, do you still intend to pursue your plans?
Dying for an imperial cause is not doing anything that's worth speaking about. As a matter of fact, you're talking about how you've grown a lot. Well, all you're going to be is about 14 inches tall, because that's all that's going to be left of you, your head, which will, of course, benefit what I'm involved in, the head coughing business. This dying doing something, I changed my mind, I'm on the road to whatever. It's this knee-jerk, reactionary, uninformed, gumpified, and soon-to-be-destroyed Americana John Wayne symbolism. Well, there's a response to that. And you're about to hear some more of that response. You know what time it is. Slave time. Check it out. You're listening to 104.1, 101.1 Santa Cruz, 106.7 Illinois, LUBER.com, the world, radioforall.net, the universe, and click in on your Google web, the Slave Revolt Radio, and check out the blog and the blogosphere. You know what time it is. Tonight, we're going to deal with the Big Brother Society, surveillance society, on a national and international level. And we're going to deal with it and what to do about it. So we got all that and a hell of a lot more on 104.1 Slave. Revolt.
Seekers everywhere. I was right. Everything I knew was wrong.
And no way to measure what the amount of energy that's going to flow out from that light off is going to do to the rest of the planets in the solar system.
Is beyond the shadow. And tonight, what we're going to deal with is an issue that's taken deeper and deeper root in America. Technological advancements in many ways can be an illusion. And it can give one the impression that they reside in a society that's moving in a positive direction. They often throw terms like this is development and things of that particular nature. But more individual or flexible direction in a society and technology's development in a particular society does not truly necessarily correspond with advancement. There's been technological development, so to speak, in the area of medicine. But as we've seen with Vioxx and a lot of other things, one can't say that's an advancement in the true sense when people are dropping dead because of how the market system puts out these medicines that are supposed to be for the benefit of the masses. We've seen so-called development and technological advancements in the food and seed industry. But once again, we've seen how that has often played itself out in the GMO sphere. And of course, weapon technology advancement in the hands of the imperialist class. Well, we know what that means, especially people who reside in the area of Iraq. Now, the digital technological data collection advancement that is developed in the United States is something that Robert O'Hara, who has recently written a book called No Place to Hide, goes into on certain levels. And he deals with what he calls the security industrial complex that is developing within this particular society. So first off, let's hear Robert O'Hara outline the merger of the data collection service and the state on the Terry Gross Show. And then let's take it from there. So check this out.
After the attacks on 9/11, the government was anxious to prevent any future attacks. At the time, we didn't know if there was going to be follow-ups across the world or here in the States. And so they reached out to these information companies that had grown quite dramatically in the 1990s, and they said, can you help us? We need to find people. We need to find folks who are related to the terrorists on those planes, and we need to do it now. And that began the marriage that I write about.
Some of the information and technology that's being used for intelligence gathering was developed for commercial marketing. And one example is a system that was devised by the company Axiom. And this is a system called Telesource that developed through telemarketing. Can you tell us about the system and how it was used in telemarketing?
Well, Axiom's one of the world's largest data managers.
so they get information and maintain it for many or most of the major banks, retailers. They manage information for the credit bureau that we know as TransUnion. Many people probably have heard of that. It's one of the large three credit bureaus. And for years and years, they collected all sorts of information about regular folks, the value of your house, the kind of car you drive, the kind of job you have, your estimated income, the number of kids in your house. They can tell what kind of magazines you read and sometimes where you go on vacation or the books that you've bought over the phone or online. One of the things that Axiom became very good at with some of its partners was collecting not only regular listed phone numbers, but unlisted phone numbers. And they get those through a whole array of means. But one of them is just getting them directly from individuals through surveys and warranty cards and such. So they have one of the largest collections of listed and unlisted phone systems in the world, so that they can resell this information, and that's what Telesource does. So I'll give you an example, Terry. You make a phone call to an 800 line and you want to order a sweater. If you're ordering from a company that works with Axiom, they can know, even before they answer your phone call, who's calling, and they can know information about you so that you fit into perhaps a profitable profile. You have such and such kind of car. You drive a Mercedes and all the rest. And so they can pitch this product to you in a way that's different than they would pitch it to me. And all of it happens instantaneously. And they use this sort of derived information, which they sometimes themselves call intelligence, to target people that are going to be most profitable.
So as you heard from O'Hara, supposedly after the 9/11 hit, the government wanted to reach out and find out about the terrorists. So they turned to the Data Technology Network. Now, as we know, in the hands of the government, they're not going to, of course, use it for the overall population's benefit any more than the data technology privatized the corporations that are gathering a lot of information are doing it for our particular individual benefit. They're doing it for their own marketing schemes and interests, and they quite naturally meld right within the government's interests, especially corporations that are seeing themselves more and more under the scrutiny of a world population that sees that their interest and the corporate interest is dramatically in opposition to one another. But this type of data information type stuff has its precedence, even on the cruder levels, like in the 60s and 70s. The FBI and other agencies would take down people's license plates numbers who are at Muhammad Ali boxing matches and then turn it over to the proper authorities because they associated anyone behind Ali as being part of the kind of anti-establishment movement. They turn it over to the IRS and things like that, just to try to choke you up and stuff. And during the 30s, there was technological advancements accomplished by people within IBM. But how did IBM use that technology? What they did was they turned it over to the Nazis so that the Nazis can use that technology that they got from IBM to better sort out the disposable people, the undesirables, to better format their genocidal program, as exemplified in the book IBM and the Holocaust, that has been out for a couple of years. So technology in the hands of a ruthless, barbaric ruling class can often have deadly consequences. But next, Terry Gross asks, if this technological information is being shared with law enforcement. So let's see what O'Hara has to say about this. Check it out.
Okay, and is this information being shared with intelligence agencies? And if so, how are the intelligence agencies using it?
Well, let's move away from Axiom because, of course, it's only just one of many of these companies. The industry in general shares much of the same information. And the way that they distinguish themselves in the marketplace is that they provide special services. So there are some companies like Seisint, which is short for Seismic Intelligence, that focus on law enforcement and fraud detection. And they'll have, say, 20 billion records, that's billion with a B, about every adult in the United States, or virtually every adult. And their service is to law enforcement, who says, I want to know about Terry Gross or Robert O'Hara, and they type your name in and maybe your phone number or the license plate number on your car, and up will pop a dossier that includes lots of these identifying details, or where you lived, the kinds of licenses you have, if you have a criminal record, former roommates, and all the rest. And so the answer to your question is that not just with Axiom, but with these other companies as well, they're providing this information as contractors in the war on terror to local, state, and federal law enforcement agency, as well as the intelligence community.
So once again, as you mentioned, Choice Point and all of these others are providing information to law enforcement contractors. Now, this is all under the whole thing of the war on drugs and everything like that. And we've seen how this government has used this. At the same time, recently, Choice Point was involved in this whole ID theft scam. This is where Choice Point is notifying a number of people by mail that the company has to rescreen 17,000 business customers who buy the data to make sure that they're legitimate. The so-called thieves stole identities in more than 50 bogus Choice Point accounts. Now, at the same time, and they have a whole list of the thousands of people in different areas, you know, Hawaii, 677, Delaware, 1,072, California, there was like 34,000 plus people, Maryland, there was 2,750, on and on and on. So all of these people lost or had their identity stolen by these particular thieves. Yet at the same time, a Choice Point is working hoof and hoof with the government and giving information about people. Now, this is either just a colossal incompetence, or it helps expose, once again, it could be both, their priorities or lack thereof in really protecting people. Because if Choice Point is working with the government, supposedly, to protect the masses of people from terrorist attacks and to track down so-called terrorists, yet at the same time, they didn't even have the basic apparatus to stop themselves from having their own data being stolen, with thousands of people's names that they have access to and information about them, then what does that say about the so-called formation of their so-called protection of citizens in this society and their national and international war on terrorism? They're not concerned with the masses of people and stuff. This is all a charade. You know, just some little common thieves who wanted basically probably just to, you know, soak people from their, you know, their banking accounts and their credit cards, were easily able to manipulate this little process. And Choice Point, who obviously the last thing they had under consideration was the protection of people's privacy, because they're in that whole game to steal your privacy, was too busy to give them the benefit of the doubt, was too busy turning over the names to law enforcement so that they can go ahead and do their COINTEL type program deeds on activists and radicals and whoever else. These thugs have their pistol grips aimed at. So this shows the farce of this whole process and how it's being phrased and set up.
Absolutely. And you know something, Trace, I saw an article in the New York Times the other day that is actually relevant to what we're discussing now. They were talking about the problem of spamming. So see, actually, dig this. Spamming is against the interests of the capitalists. How so? Well, because once people steal an identification, right, or an email address, and start spamming into a network, it takes hours for people to just constantly have to delete all of these ads and, you know, crap that, you know, is irrelevant, you know, or they don't want. It just takes hours. They figured the average that spamming steals from the average capitalist is per computer unit 1 8-hour day. And they add that up with how many workers they got, that comes to millions of dollars in lost labor power, trying to deal with all this spamming, deleting all this spamming that comes up. You never think of it when you see it, you just know to press delete. But that's what it means to the capitalists. They can't stop spamming. Why not? Just make it illegal. It is illegal. Well, wait a minute. Well, how could it be illegal? Well, it's not quite illegal in the United States because they don't want to take the steps that the Europeans have taken to actually outlaw spamming companies, spamming, you know, you can't send it, and they have a much more effective law. In the United States, because of the penchant for a so-called free enterprise, they are hesitant to take decisive steps against something that in the long run is directly against their interests. They'd have to shut down some of these spamming companies. Because the way it goes now is they require that spammers add a thing that to delete me from this list, right? So you go down, you press that, and then you put your name and your email in there, and they say your email is now off the list. Yeah, but what they do is they put it on another list. So they never stop. And that's not illegal yet. Well, it's free enterprise. And as we all know, that's the American way.
Now next, Frank Morales. He's a researcher, human rights activist, fighter, so on and so forth. He outlines how the ruling class truly uses data intel information in the real world. So let's check out what Frank has to say. Check this out.
Pentagon, legal, clearly it's domestic operational law. What it was at one point that we would think that that was a contradiction in terms for the Pentagon to be dealing domestically, but we've come a long way. And this handbook is a legal handbook written to support and to offer legal guidance around various missions for the Pentagon within America. A large section of the handbook deals with civil disturbance suppression. This all kind of dovetails with the creation of the Homeland Defense, the tooling up of the apparatus of repression, particularly the apparatus of intelligence collection, you know, surveillance and so forth, intelligence gathering being sort of the number one requirement of traditionally of counterinsurgency. They want to know who's doing what, what's going on which way, in order to attempt to disrupt it so that from total information awareness, Poindexter, Iran-Contra, criminal, which just today put out this idea that they would create some sort of advisory committee, a panel or something that would oversee people's privacy, and that would make everything okay. I don't know if people are aware of the total information awareness. It's this notion that through computers we can just cast a net in such a way as to bag all the information about one's life, you know, credit cards, and everywhere your name appears in some digital way, or they can track all that and put it through filters and figure out if you're a potential terrorist. Like this. But it's one aspect of this apparatus, surveillance mania, which is going on, which has to do with forming a better picture so that experts in suppressing dissent and counterinsurgency and keeping down the people's movements from their perspective can function more effectively.
All right, so as Frank pointed out, you know, this whole homeland defense is part and parcel connected with the intelligence gathering apparatus where Choice Point and all of these others fit in. And that has historically worked out hand in hand with counterinsurgency. They're finding out information about organizations, groups, individuals to undercut what they're doing. Now, they have it under the whole guise, of course, of fighting a war on terrorism. But just like in the war on drugs, it was just a broad safety net and used as an apparatus to bludgeon the black community in general, as a tool of repression against black people. It was used as a tool to undercut any form of developing political apparatus within black people. Well, under this whole war on terrorism stuff, that's just at another stage of this whole fight against segments of the oppositional class, of the working class in general. So when they talk about this is a society that talks about using a preemptive strike. These are the terms that they use. That was what they used to justify blowing up Iraq over, a preemptive strike, that they needed to strike first because Saddam posed a threat. Now, if you have a society that does that, a government, a ruling class that blatantly does that, which is in violation of international law, what do you think these same type of scoundrels are going to do concerning the laws that are supposed to, quote unquote, be set up as a fire barrier for individual protection? Man, they'll do a preemptive strike and burn down those fire protections just as quick as they burnt up Iraq. This is the type of ruthless society that we're dealing with in the real world. And their respect for international law and the well-being of people internationally is just as shallow as their concern for the citizenry within this particular society. But next, let's go back to Terry Gross as she asked Robert O'Hara, what are the information intelligence agencies selling to the government? So let's see what O'Hara has to say, and let's take it from there. Check it out.
The information service corporations actually selling their data, their portfolios of information on us to intelligence agencies, or are they just selling their systems that that collect and analyze data?
They're selling the information, and they're selling more of it than we can really imagine. And they're selling access to more of it than we can imagine. But they're not just selling the information. More and more, they're selling intelligence. One of the companies that I've looked at, named Choice Point, which is based in Atlanta, the Atlanta suburbs, in effect operates as a private intelligence service for the government. Now, what does that mean? It means that they're not just providing mailing lists or lists of people or even just the dossiers, but more and more they're providing the tools, these super smart computer tools, the software that looks at all the information and finds the patterns and the links among people in the way that an intelligence analyst would do, except it might take a single intelligence analyst 10 years to find the same information and the derived intelligence information that Choice Point can provide, or Cizent for that matter, or LexisNexis, in maybe 5 minutes.
So once again, here's Choice Point is working hand in hand with the ruling class, hand in hand with the state, as a basically a private mercenary corporation. They're selling the government not only super smart computer tools, but software They give them direct access under a magnifying glass to the masses of people that the government wishes to target. Yet, they can't keep their own facilities with all of this technology from being plunged themselves. That shows one of two things: their priorities, which basically means they're not there for our protection. Because if you have your bank account ravaged and you're already in kind of an economic precarious situation, that is a form of personal terrorism, because you can be out in the streets if you're just renting a home. I mean, you know, renting an apartment or something very quickly, you and your family. So that could be a form of personal terrorism. Yet here's big bad Choice Point that didn't have any kind of supposedly safety net and procedure to a firewall to protect the people that they are basically spying on for the damn government to protect these people's interests. This is just a sham. What kind of homeland security is this? It's not real. It's false. And it's not used for the true protection of the masses. There was and is not the proper regulation. The government is able to skirt around even its little weak laws of, quote unquote, not spying on its citizens on a certain level by going to private firms. So they're able to hopscotch around them not doing it by contracting it out to private firms. Now, everyone knows that these laws weren't truly designed for them to hopscotch around and play games, but these people are cynical. They're not there for our interests. They're in opposition, and they're using this information gathering network in the same way that they used it back in the 60s to destroy and neutralize oppositional targets and targets that they see as a potential threat or an existing threat.
Yes, indeed. In his famous work, The State and Revolution, Lenin states that the state is composed of bodies of armed men. That is to say, a police force, an army, prisons. Liberal so-called intellectuals attack this theory, and they say, oh, come on now. That's not, it's more complex than that. We got schools, we got this, we got that. Well, I'm living here in Oakland, and they're closing schools. And I'm looking at what Tracy's saying right now, and it's almost obvious that this state that the liberal says protects us all and looks out for us all is working, is almost merging with sections of the capitalist class in this military-industrial complex, with no regard to the rights of the citizens or just plain human decency. This is serious.
Now, next, Terry Gross goes into classical non-reality liberal fashion that she doesn't know if she needs to be happy or afraid about the information O'Hara's outlining, and then O'Hara responds. So, check this out.
Oh, man. It's hard to figure out whether this is reason to rejoice or to be scared. You know, the good part is that there's information that can help intelligence agencies track terrorists or catch terrorists. That's good news. On the other hand, there is a very big brother factor here.
Well, I think of it sort of this way. The first thought is there's absolutely no way to deny the potential utility of all this information. It makes the job of being a cop and an intelligence analyst and the national security official much easier, because you have more information and more intelligence at your fingertips. Here's the problem, and it's a big problem. In America, we have a real tradition of wanting some space and some control over our own lives. This is nothing new. This is what they said in the Federalist Papers, and Thomas Jefferson was a big proponent, as everybody probably recalls. One of our Supreme Court justices 100 years ago referred to it as the right to be left alone, or the right to be let alone. It's something that's very important to us. And what we're creating here is a system that enables both businesses and government officials to look into our lives in a way that simply was impossible a generation ago. And they're using it not just to sell us soap and widgets and such, but to decide if we pose a risk or if we ought to be talked to. And it becomes a very different thing when the government has access to this. Now, there's another layer. If this were all happening in the government, we might find that objectionable or not. But in any case, there are laws and rules that guide how the government uses information. The government can't create databases willy-nilly. It has to say what the reason is. It has to sort of publicize this at some level, with, of course, restrictions on the intelligence world. Well, guess what? The private sector is doing for the government things the government can't do for itself. The government can't maintain records on 215 million people and use them as whenever it chooses. But it can go to these companies and say, we'd like your help. And that's what's happened since 9/11.
So the government can basically overstep civil liberties restrictions by just asking private corporations to do the work.
There are those who argue that the government, by outsourcing this work, is really sidestepping the spirit of rules that were put into place 30 years ago to limit what the government could do. I bet a lot of people will recall hearing about J. Edgar Hoover and the FBI's domestic surveillance. The Army had a surveillance unit in intelligence work that was looking at regular people, in many cases moms and dads, religious people, certainly folks in the civil rights movement, who were doing things that were perfectly reasonable, and now we find, in fact, quite laudable. They were speaking their voice about women's rights, about civil rights. They were opposing the war, and they were doing it in a way that was perfectly legal, and yet the government was compiling files and, in some cases, actually using those files to undermine people personally. The laws that followed said you can't do that. You have to limit how we use databases. You have to limit how you use computer systems. Well, those laws don't really apply in the same way to the private companies. And so here we have all this wonderful utility that could help protect us, and yet we're also stepping into a world where there are suddenly huge gaps between our values, the traditions that we have of autonomy and privacy, and these amazing uses of information and technology.
So once again, this exposes a number of things, even though these two have, you know, obviously certain illusions and on and on. But, you know, when O'Hara talks about how it makes the job for the cops and the intelligence analysts and the national security people, it makes it easier for them to do their job. Well, wait a minute. See, there's an aspect of not having any kind of class analysis and reality that these liberal types just kind of just float off into the ozone with, that is just extremely reckless and dangerous. Because one can argue that, well, speaking of cops, one can argue that the cops having pepper spray and attack dogs and taser guns makes their job easier. But it doesn't benefit us. It doesn't benefit us, the masses of people, that they have taser guns that are shooting out 50,000 volts and knocking people's hearts to the other side of their body, that they're volting up a 6-year-old kid with a taser gun, a 9-year-old handcuffed girl, a 70-plus-year-old person killing that person. This is sick. Now, they didn't have to risk getting bubble gum on them by grabbing the 6-year-old kid. So instead of worrying about getting some bubble gum or some chocolate on them, because the kid may have been eating, you know, a Reese's peanut butter cup. Instead, they zap him with a taser gun. Now, one could say that makes their job easier. But at the same time, it makes our lives in a much more precarious situation. So to align yourself with, if it makes the state job easier and whatever it proclaims is trying to do, that's a benefit for us overall. It's just being in a non-clash reality form of an illusion. See, this is, once again, how these pathetic liberals and Democrats and, you know, these keep hope alive is type, just fall right off the mountain every time. And it also points out that where are the Democrats and Republicans? Well, they're where you expect them to be, silent on this issue.
That's right.
Because, as he said, he mentioned the fact that the government is intentionally skirting around its own particular laws by saying, okay, well, since there's certain firewalls, supposedly, that prevent us, supposedly, from gathering direct information on people, we'll just outsource it out. Now, obviously, this is a perversion of the law, but you don't see any Democrats and Republicans, you know, setting up any mandate against it. It's all fiction. These guys are playing games. And when you see this type of stuff happen with the private sector doing the job that supposedly the government is not technically supposed to do, see, this is when you start seeing. And this is when it becomes very clear the merger of the corporate state apparatus. You see this fusing in a common interest for political, social, economic control. This, the government is outsourcing these jobs out. That means that they're paying these corporations. At the same time, they're paying these informations to get intel information on individuals. They're turning around and closing all of these schools. They're making all these cutbacks. They're shutting down libraries, destroying music departments in public schools, disintegrating every aspect of human development that one can imagine. You know, more and more people are becoming homeless. They're just collaborating this whole super shelter system, becoming more ruthless in that whole aspect. They're outsourcing jobs, you know, making the working class more and more vulnerable. Yet, all what they have, what do they have money for? They have money to spend on a war in Iraq. They have money to spend on the war against organizations and individuals in this society, all in the name of war against terrorism. They have the money to spend in every aspect of a class, a class against class construct. But the basic things that could make people's lives somewhat survivable: healthcare, decent schooling, decent shelter, they don't have the money for. Once again, this helps expose what's going on. Now, what's going on at some of these schools? As you know, I mentioned them, you know, rushing to close them down, yet they're spending all this money on intel. Well, at Britton Elementary School, this is in Sutter, California, they introduced a scheme to identify its pupils. What am I talking about? They're chipping their pupils. And now it's, quote unquote, mandatory. A recent letter sent home to parents from the school said, quote, "It is important the badge be worn at all times during school hours. This additional step will help keep your child safe while at school. Students who lose or destroy their badges will be accountable for the cost of replacing them." Basically, these are little ID badges, but, you know, technological ID badges that has a bulletin that identifies the kid that, you know, when activated, it can show where the kid is anywhere around the campus and stuff at that particular time. In other words, they set up this whole ID system, and they're starting it at an elementary level to drone these kids right from the beginning to be used to being under the surveillance, under the thumb of the corporate state, under SAM, under the governmental apparatus, so that every move that you make, SAM has its all-powerful eye on you.
Now, you know what? Let's listen to all this stuff that Tracy just said. I want to put my little old spin on this. Check this out. What is false consciousness? False consciousness is that phenomena that exists inside the human brain. An ideology, that any ideology, that prevents the person that has that ideology from correcting their own mistakes, from learning and coming to logical conclusions on the basis of their life experience. See, false consciousness prevents you from learning, from assimilating logical conclusions. Let's look at Terry Gross again. Using this method, understanding false consciousness, it's hard to figure out whether I should be happy or afraid. Is it? Well, not for me. Not for me. And not for Tracy. Why? Because we're looking at it from the perspective of workers, class-conscious workers. We have nothing in common with the capitalist state. We don't have the same interests as our oppressors, the capitalists. We don't share anything with them except the oxygen, and they're destroying that. You understand? Natural resources they're destroying and hogging up. We don't share. We don't have the same fears. Oh, no. We have quite different fears. She says she's happy because it makes us, she says, more effective against the terrorists. What does this poor creature mean when she says us more effective against the terrorists? In reality, she's talking about the state being more effective against what terrorists? There are no terrorists. Let's look, we're going to stop even giving any credence to that crap. Yeah, there was a handful of people that laid a couple of serious blows on the United States. Yes, the Twin Towers were blown up. Yes, they did hijack some planes. It's nothing compared to the terror wreaked on this world by the state, controlled by the U.S. ruling class. The bombings everywhere. The poisons that they pump into the atmosphere. And I'm not talking about even, you know, like the day-to-day poisons, but I'm talking, you know, got the nerve to talk about chemical warfare. They got all the damn chemical warfare and don't want nobody to have it. I wonder why. So she's afraid, though, at the same time. Well, that's called mentally, that's schizophrenia. That's a political schizophrenia she has. Yes, it is, from her own mouth. And why is she afraid? Because of the Big Brother syndrome. Well, unfortunately, Miss Gross, and others who think like her, you can't be afraid and happy at the same time. That's not normal, you see. You have a contradiction that you have to work out, or you're going to remain with political schizophrenia until we put you in the ground or transform you to dust. There is no contradiction for the class-conscious worker. Because we understand that this information gathering and putting these tags on our children so you can follow them around all day and know when they went to the bathroom and know if they're in the auditorium and know when they left, that's not in our interest. We know that because we have a worldview that teaches us, explains to us that our interests and the interests of the capitalists who currently dominate the world are diametrically opposed.
Now, to show you that this has actually been going on for a while, In 1998, Project Censor gave an award to Nikki Hager. It was about her expose exposing the global surveillance system. Here next is Terry Allen talking about Nikki Hager's work that deals with the NSA and the U.S. Empire. So check it out.
What this network does, it's a conglomeration. It's run by the NSA, the National Security Agency of the United States, and it's comprised of the United States, Australia, New Zealand, the UK, and Canada. And using listening stations around the world, it monitors all of the world's telephone, email, telex, and fax communication, all the electronic communication in the world. It operates with a dictionary. It's called the Echelon Dictionary. And each of these countries contributes words, keywords that are then electronically searched, picked out of the air, literally, and as defined by this dictionary. So the word could be Greenpeace, and in fact has been. The word could be plastic explosive, or it could be Yasser Arafat. It could be anything. And then these keywords are then in the messages that in which they're included are coded. The place of origin is noted and entered into a computer bank. Researchers can then go back and collate these and basically monitor the activities of not only potentially terrorist group, but activist group or any kind of dissident organization around the world. Now, in the U.S., as you know, there's a ban against surveillance, domestic surveillance by intelligence agencies. And the way this network gets around it is the U.S. asks England to spy on U.S. activists. England asks the U.S. to spy on its activists. So that what we have is a monitoring system of immense proportion. And Nikki, who is in New Zealand, managed to win the confidence of workers at the local intelligence network in New Zealand through a long process of making them understand what the implications of this were, of this activity are for their nation and for the world.
Do you know a terrorist? Not long ago, this would have seemed like a ridiculous question, but not anymore. The United States government is offering rewards of up to $25 million for information that prevents an international terrorist act against U.S. persons or property, or brings to justice persons who have committed one. To date, more than $8 million has been paid. Stop and think about it. Information about suspicious activities involving aircraft, about stolen explosives or biological materials, about letters or packages. It all could add up to preventing a terrorist act. Now do something about it. Call Rewards for Justice at 1-800-US-REWARDS. 1-800-US-REWARDS. Or email us at mail@rewardsforjustice.net. You may be eligible for a reward. Your call or email will remain confidential. A public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Department of State.
So once again, this shows you what this is all about, really. So we went into the aspect of how Sam outsources to private firms to work his apparatus of terror and info information. But at the same time, they do it on a state-by-state level. So here the U.S. Empire is in this little collaboration with England. So the U.S. government, through Echelon and all of this, they spy on England, England's citizens. The state over there in England spies on U.S. citizens, and then they just give each other the information. See, there's no excuse. And this was a report in 1998 that, of course, was part of one of the top censored stories, which, for obvious reasons, is pretty clear why. They don't want this type of information out. But this is what they're truly all about.
Mm-hmm.
These guys are just working. Look, they have keywords, as Terry Allen said. It could be anything from Greenpeace to whatever. And if you type that in to your in the internet, and go out on the internet with some of these keywords, boom, suddenly you're within their matrix. And of course, it's not for them to give you a pat on the back.
More like a knife in the back.
Next, researcher, once again, Frank Morales, goes into the pathologies of militarism in the concept of, amongst other things, is war on terror and the global imperial expansion network. So let's check out what Morales has to say. Dig this.
Say that it's historically and objectively the case that these discussions, this apparatus, these particular euphemisms, etc., were in fact being set up, money was being spent. These things, they just pop up sometime after 2001. It was in motion. As we said, you know, what was required was an event that would, from their perspective, change everything as we know it. Well, what they're talking about is we are executing democracy, and we're going to attempt to suppress any and all dissent. Anyone who disagrees with us and organizes according to their beliefs, we're preparing for that. So it leads one to the conclusion that if 9-1-1 wasn't in fact some kind of terrorist act on the part of certain elements within the U.S. elite, it certainly fits hand in glove with the direction of things, the institutional growth of certain bodies and institutions and sectors within the Pentagon, etc. It fits like 2 years. It just kind of, they just work together quite nicely. And it may in fact be that at some point we'll learn the real truth about the nature of, you know, we know the pathology of militarism, the provocateur nature of militarism, which finances both Iraq and Iran at one point, which is part and parcel of the military-industrial complex that finances and spreads weapons anywhere that they can get a buck for them. There's a pathology in this kind of provocateur mentality. We know about Operation Northwood back in 1962, in which the Pentagon, you know, looked to create some kind of catastrophe involving, you know, the destruction of U.S. property and lives down around Cuba in order to justify going in. They would actually create this terrorist opportunity. I think now we look at some of the things that are being put forth, and I think it lends complete credibility to this notion of the terrorist nature of the present elite, you know, the sector of the U.S. government that's pushing forth in the way that it's pushing forth. I mean, take, for example, the Defense Science Board had a summer study on special operations and joint forces in supporting of countering terrorism. This is in August of 2002. It was a study that was done at the behest of Rumsfeld, Secretary of Defense, and issued by the Defense Science Board. And what it calls for is the creation of what is referred to as the Proactive Preemptive Operations Group. And one of the functions of this group would be to do terrorist actions so that this would cause a counter-reaction or stimulate, as they say, reactions on the part of so-called terrorists. So this is a group that Rumsfeld is looking to set up, which would in fact involve itself in these kinds of provocateur activities, carrying out terrorist activity in order to justify a counter-reaction on the part of a much larger, obviously, U.S. military force. The Proactive Preemptive Operations Group, it would be run out of the National Security Council and would act as a provocateur on a state and global level. We have to understand the provocateur term in terms of the nature of this military police state as it's tied in with the pathology of militarism. That certainly lends credence to the possibility that the elements that were looking to carry forth this program, dating back to, you know, the early reports on preemptive nuclear strike around the world and so forth, that same group of people would be capable of mounting a massive terrorist event within America, such as 9-1-1, in order to justify their plan. There certainly is enough surrounding documentation and understanding to substantiate that view in terms of the infrastructure of Homeland Defense, the Northern Command, all that stuff early on being in motion, and reports such as the one I just mentioned, Rumsfeld's P2OG, which is referred to group, which is a terrorist group to quote-unquote stimulate reactions on the part of terrorists. And the document warns that anybody who doesn't agree with us, quote, their sovereignty will be at risk.
You can't kill what you can't see. Do you know a terrorist? Well, of course you do, folks. You know the damn police. And the police are terrorists. This ain't about no hocus-pocus thing. You see, they try to take your eyes, community, the way they do, and those black suits with their little military-looking hats and their jack boots and their automatic weapons, and they got a special machine just to knock your door in and all that old madness. If that's not terror, I don't know what is. Sure it is. And that, and the, you know, because the aim of that, kill one, terrorize millions, is to put that fear in you. Check this out.
Now, you know, Morales brought up a number of things. And one of the things he brought up was the U.S. government's, what's called Operation Northwood. And, you know, there's a book out called Body of Secrets. And that goes into a number of things, basically secrets of the U.S. empire. And Operation Northwood was part of the program where the U.S. government at its highest levels had outlined doing terrorist attacks against its own citizenry to then justify them being attacked, you know, to his populace, saying, look, some terrorists, so-and-so did this. Now that justifies us going out and slaughtering them. So Northwood, they had come up with a number of things that they were talking about doing to individuals, you know, noted figures and stuff like that, and or institutions within America, to then justify and pin it on Cuba as a justification of attacking Cuba. This is how ruthless this empire is. See, it also helps expose that, yeah, these criminals do conspire. This is not some kind of, you know, mystical thing to think of the state being involved in conspiring against our interest and working in these types of very covert, sick, and deadly apparatus mechanisms. This is the way a terrorist state operates. Now, what's also interesting is that they were justifying it as a way to, quote-unquote, suppress any dissent. So now you move up to 2005, and you have Rumsfeld with all of his little, you know, secretive shenanigans going on. And he has this proactive preventive measure set up where they plan on doing terrorism, basically, to justify counter-reactive, reactionary moves on those that they deem as a threat or terrorist themselves. Now, this is similar to some of the techniques that they would try and did apply on the Panthers, where they would have their little agents slither into the Panther organization, and then these guys would do criminal acts and other things, and then they would justify attacking the Panthers overall because their covert counterintelligence agent had slithered into the group and was doing stuff that basically they told the little Sambos to do in the first place. So this is what we're dealing with when you're dealing, in essence, with a barbaric, inhumane, savage, and lawless society. But next, let's go on and deal with the issue that security, as Morales goes into how Homeland Defense was being set up before 9/11/2001, so it should be seen in the context of not security for us, but security for the ruling class who's using it against us. So check this out.
I think it's clear that the attempt to repress the citizenry, repress the people around their rights, freedom of expression, their rights of assembly, the attack on certain sectors of the community. These people are fully aware that the hundreds, if not thousands, of people that have been forced into detention, forced out of the country, harassed and intimidated and so forth, have nothing to do with any kind of quote-unquote terrorism. It's clearly part of a political ploy, in a sense. I mean, there's an element of both counterinsurgency and direct attack for maybe other kinds of reasons. But, I mean, it's clear that there's no rational justification for it. You know, the criminal activity, the attack on the Muslim community and other communities ostensibly have some relationship to both the terrorists and so on. The whole thing is a hype. The whole thing is being utilized to create a strategy of tension within America to rationalize and justify this repressive legislation and tactics on the part of the police on the street during protests and so forth to maintain control of the ship of state while these agendas are attempted abroad. It's clear, from my perspective anyway, that the game now is to make it impossible for anyone to organize effectively against this agenda. And obviously, I don't think that they can succeed. I think it's clear that people, you know, are quite willing and determined to continue by any means necessary to deconstruct this pathology. The Patriot II, which includes American citizens could be stripped of their citizenship and shipped out of town if they support an organization that Bush thinks is a terrorist organization. Secret detention, the so-called terror suspects, disappear you. Municipal and state regulations curtailing police spying would be thrown out. I mean, here in New York City, the Handshoe Agreement, which limited the ability of the police to spy on organizations when they had no probable cause, et cetera, all that's thrown out. Now, we have here David Cohen, who runs the intelligence the division out of the NYPD following 9/11, former director of operations at the Central Intelligence Agency, who had a reputation of manufacturing so-called intelligence in order to justify their militarist, their agenda. He leans on the local municipalities, judges here, and so forth, and they effectively throw out this Handshoe Agreement it was referred to, which has been there since the early 70s, to limit the ability of the police to spy on, quote, legal protests. Obviously, in a class war situation, particularly when, you know, some of the niceties of bourgeois democracy are being shaved away, they could care less about what it is that would prevent them from getting that information. As I said, intelligence is the primary requirement of counterinsurgency. They don't believe, and it's quite true, that they can't, you know, effectively suppress what they can't see. And, of course, they don't see most of it anyway, because people are smarter than all that. But this Patriot II begins to really move us in a direction in which maybe soon public protests will be illegal. I mean, don't forget that back during World War I, people like Eugene Debs were jailed for 10 years for making an anti-war speech. So are we going to go back there? I think not. I think that we've come way too far as a movement. I think that they, as always, have underestimated the power that people have, and I think we're beginning to show it. But it's important that we beat this thing back. The Domestic Security Enhancement Act of 2003. It's about secret subpoenas, a lot of secrecy. They could conduct wiretaps to the Patriot II bill for up to 15 days. It's just deepening the counterinsurgency, the repression, the shrinking of democratic space, you know, what the trilateralists used to refer to as excess of democracy. They want to shrink it so that we don't have a lot of room to organize and to fight back. And this, you know, as I said before, it works with the overall program of carrying out their war-making abroad, militarizing the police at home, militarizing American society at home. Because, you know, there are cultural aspects to this, too. The media is in lockstep with it. The big movies, all the warmongering, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, it takes a whole system correlated in this way. Then you can really call it a fascist situation.
Now, as Morales was outlining, basically, for the little liberals and the pacifists, it's in a sense a call to you. Y'all are going to have to get off the fence. Either just go on over and fight for the empire like you're basically already doing, or realize that the whole economic, social, energy order, you know, when I say energy, I'm talking about the whole industrial engine and the finite resources that this society and industrial societies are based in, that combined with the fact that it's put within a capital market order of you got to have some winners, you got to have some losers. In other words, it's not a cooperative type of society that we live in. It's all a dog-eat-dog, war-against-the-world type of capital market scheme that with finite resources are just about to hit the bell curve within this particular planet. You have those who are the financiers and the owners, quote unquote, of the corporations that are involved in this economic order, the financial and energy systems. They're pulling out all stops, and they basically have set for the planet a planet of war, of continuous war. And they are putting forth all of their particular mechanisms to try to, one, control their population within their own borders, like the U.S., and are ruthlessly set forth to stomp out the human beings that actually have some of these finite resources under their feet. They're not playing around. These wars are going to be set up and delivered over water in the future and a number of other things. But the oil thing is key for the industrial energy societies. And considering that most realize that Hubert's law is, you know, pretty close to being correct and was correct in his prediction that the U.S. was going to hit more or less the bell curve in the early 70s, and his prediction has said that on a global level, it's about to hit, you know, around 2010, that this is just around the corner. And basically, the world is going to be in a crisis because we're not going to be able to sustain these types of industrial societies in the way that they are set up in this economic order. But see, we don't live in a rational world. So the plunderers of the planet's resources, human resources, animal resources, energy resources, they're not concerned with trying to make a planet that's habitable and work in cohesion for all of its living and non-living beings. It's about domination. And thus, all of this Patriot Act 2 and process for homeland securities and all of that type of stuff, which was set up even before 2001, helps outline what these bandits are really all about.
And the fact that Tracy talks about how they had thought about many of these measures before 9-1-1 actually proves something. It's what they wanted to do all along. That's the key. You see, this was they didn't come up with all of this stuff because they're really fast and nimble and intelligent and quick. They had been dreaming about doing this to the American people for decades. They had already been thinking about it. How can we tighten up? How can we get them, you know, get that regimen going? How can we get more production out of them? How can we get more money out of them? They've been thinking about it all along. And then this 9-1-1 thing happens. Now, there's some debate this way, that way, about the degree of the American government's actual participation. We know they trained the bastards, and we know that. There ain't no doubt about that. So I don't understand where all this sympathy is. You know, we should have went after them at that point for their dirty intelligence games that led to the creation of Al-Qaeda, if it exists. Okay? Because remember, they came out with all their pictures the next day. I had to say to myself, boy, these are some smart son of a... No, they're not. No, they're not. They knew these cats. What? They trained them. Now look, they originally stated that the Patriot Act was a temporary measure to save the American people from these mean old terrorists. And in fact, portions of the Patriot Act were supposed to expire after a couple of years. Well, now, Mr. Bush has let us know in no uncertain terms that he is for making those measures permanent. Why? Well, are they going to bomb tomorrow? No. They already done dropped the bomb on your ass. See? They done already pulled it off on you. Now follow the logic. It's illegal to support terrorist organizations, my fellow Americans. Oh, okay. Nobody wants to support terrorism. I guess you're right, boss. But wait a minute. What is a terrorist organization? Are we talking about our local police force? No. Hardly. Well, here's one. The ANC, in a struggle for liberation, occasionally used illegal methods against the South African state, the South African Reich. Sometimes bombs were used. What about the ANC? Is the ANC a terrorist organization? And if so, I guess that means that Nelson Mandela, one of the world's greatest statesmen, is a terrorist. So Nelson Mandela's a terrorist. Yeah, right. This is BS, and it must be opposed, brothers and sisters. That's the key. When you start thinking like that, now you know we got to revamp, you know, that something's wrong here. That what we actually have to do is fight to repeal all reactionary, anti-democratic, anti-working class legislation. Smash the Taft-Hartley Act. Smash the Patriot Act. Now.
Now, recently, Ahmed Abu Ali was accused of plotting or conversing with some people who may have wanted to kill Boy George while he was in school in Saudi Arabia. He's actually from America, but went after high school to go to school in Saudi Arabia. He's a Saudi American. Now, as I said, he was went to school in Washington, and recently he's been tortured. He just made it back to America, but this was after he was detained for like 20 months by the Saudis, and it's clear that this was witnessed by and known about by U.S. officials. Now, David Cole, who's a lawyer, outlines what's been going on and the double standards that have been taking place. It's not really double standards. It's just class warfare that's going on in the guise of a war on terror. So let's check out what he has to say. Dig this.
Well, he was arrested in Saudi Arabia at the same time that three other Americans were arrested in Saudi Arabia. The three others were brought back to the United States for trial in conjunction with the Virginia paintball case, a case involving an alleged conspiracy to provide material support to a terrorist group in the Kashmir. One of his closest friends was one of the people brought back and was acquitted on all charges. But apparently the government didn't have enough evidence to charge Ahmed Abu Ali with the paintball charges. And so while his name came up in the case at various points, they never charged him. But instead they let the Saudis keep him locked up, and they participated in his interrogation while he was locked up in Saudi Arabia, and were apparently content to just leave him locked up there for as long as they could. When we filed a lawsuit challenging that detention and charging that he was being held at the behest of the United States, and a judge ordered that the government disclose to us the evidence concerning its arrangements with Saudi Arabia on the holding of this U.S. citizen, at that point, the government went through incredible lengths to try to stop having to provide that information, including filing motions to dismiss entirely in secret with all the argument and all the evidence in secret. And ultimately, they indicted him and brought him back here to the United States, and now at least he'll face a public trial. This is a remarkable thing. He was never charged with anything in Saudi Arabia, and Yeah, you would think that if a U.S. citizen were locked up for, you know, a month, a week, without charges in a foreign country, there would be protest. We would be filing protests. We would be making a scene, etc. No, instead, what we were doing was we were, you know, sending the FBI over to observe and participate in his interrogation. We weren't making any protests or lodging any protests whatsoever. He was not entitled to an attorney while he was there. He didn't see a single person while he was there except for his Saudi interrogator and the U.S. consular official who would occasionally go and visit him. That was it. He was, you know, effectively held incommunicado, and not a protest was filed, and no action was taken until the federal judge in the United States was you know, on the verge of ordering the government to disclose the nature of its arrangement with Saudi Arabia in this case.
So once again, this helps outline what this is really all about. Now, when the lawyer says that, you know, people wouldn't accept this, or the government would be filing, you know, complaints if it was another U.S. citizen being detained, you know, unjustifiably in another country, that's kind of an illusion, because all anyone has to do is think about Lori Berenson. She's in prison in Peru. And has been for years, over 5 years now. And this is all under the guise of her helping the Tupac Amaru. The U.S. government is known about this. As a matter of fact, her parents tried to appeal. Her parents tried to appeal to people like Crime Bill Clinton over this whole travesty of justice. She's been put in a, you know, horrendous living condition where she's often freezing and susceptible to many ailments and so on and so forth. Now, concerning the torture, this is American is apple pie too, because as old Frank Burge knows, the ex-cop in Chicago, that if you get through a bunch of Negroes, you can torture them with the nod of approval by the state. The only one who's going to stop you at the end of the day are some other black folks who are willing to put you in your casket for doing that type of stuff to you. But he spent a career torturing black people, putting electrodes to their genitals and things like that. Now, the reason why I mention this is that, see, there's a lineage going on. This is nothing new. This is how the state apparatus works. Now, they may use different terms. War on drugs, war on crime, war on immigration, so on and so forth. But at the end of the day, it's a war on us. Now, last, Morales shows the true nature of other agencies that they have working at their disposal, like the Federal Emergency Management Authority, known as FEMA, in this global war capitalist society. Check it out.
You know, it's generally understood to be the one that comes to help out after a hurricane, and people understand them that way. But what people don't know is that FEMA is kind of a civilian wing of Pentagon civil disturbance apparatus, in that through what is called within FEMA the Terrorism Incidents Annex, the Federal Response Plan within FEMA defines how they respond to what they refer to as man-made disasters. And within that is civil disturbance, dissent, people fighting back. And I think that people, you know, need to look more closely into those areas, particularly because FEMA, along with the DOD, were active in the Seattle protests, for example. FEMA, you know, issued advisories, and some of the emergency management offices around the country were talking about the possibility of anti-capitalist violence Seattle and so on. So FEMA apparatus became operative around that work, that task, and the mission, civil disturbance mission within FEMA. But I think one thing that should be recognized here is that the way in which FEMA was able to respond legally, you know, I'm not a lawyer, but bureaucratically, was to classify the Seattle protest as a terrorist or a potential terrorist event. And that's become the jargon that enables the powers that be to shift, by shifting semantically from protest to terrorism, they are able to mobilize these resources and so forth and cover it, saying, well, this could be a terrorist over here. So they were actually coordinating, along with elements of the DOD, the response in Seattle during the anti-WTO protests. But what I think it points out as well is that the war on terrorism has, in a sense, become a cover for the war on dissent. It's clear from my perspective that, as I was mentioning, that the apparatus of Homeland Defense, the repressive legislation, and so forth and so on, has a big aspect in this, the idea of suppressing dissent and, generally speaking, counterinsurgency in order to carry out the war abroad. But very often you see this being put forth in various documents and so forth within the U.S. Army Field Manual. For instance, they talk about, it's an Army manual which deals with civil disturbances. It's 19-15. But it's correlated to present-day reality, although it was written in 1985, and it's, you know, sort of the how-to to deal with the protesters from the Army's point of view. It also makes the point that, quote, civil disturbances include acts of terrorism, end of quote, which, quote, may be organized by disaffected groups who hope to embarrass the government, end of quote, and who may, in fact, quote, demonstrate as a cover for terrorism. So, as you can see, again, I'm talking about symbiosis here, between, you know, demonstrations or demonstrators and terrorism and terrorists is the operative dynamic in order to morph the Homeland Defense anti-terrorist apparatus into an anti-protest. It moves that way, and you see a lot of the use of the terminology and, you know, the kind of legalism in order to justify just that move. And, you know, to be honest with you, if you're going to spend what could be hundreds of millions of dollars on Departments of Homeland Defense and so forth and so on, the Homeland Security and the Northern Command, and operate this whole apparatus within America, and you're not doing that well in catching terrorists, you know, you got to do something. So why not get involved in suppressing dissent? You define protest as a proto-terrorist event, and that's what you see over and over.
So that just about says it all. You know, when you have a ruthless, barbaric, inhumane, savage market system that connects the civil action and demonstrations as possibly being a cover for terrorism, it becomes clear that the world has been turned on its head, for they're the real terrorists. So FEMA, organization that is supposed to, quote-unquote, be designed to deal with man-made disasters, is part of a man-made disaster within the capitalist market financial order. And the only way at the end to deal with this man-made disaster called the capitalist system is a human-made resistance movement. Hold on a sec. Well, that's just going to about wrap it up for a slave tonight. It's clear that this New World Order is nothing but an old game of capitalist conspiracy and control for our very hearts and souls, for our very humanity. Well, for humanity's sake, these New World Orderists have to find that their world is going to be placed in their own capitalist hell. Until the next time, slave revolt. Out.
Immortal technique. Revolutionary Volume 2. Yeah. Broadcasting live from Harlem, New York. Let the truth be known. better watch what the fuck flies out of your mouth, or I'ma hijack a plane and fly it into your house. Burn your apartment with your family tied to the couch and slit your throat so when you scream, only blood comes out. I doubt that there could ever be a more wicked MC, cause AIDS-infested child molesters aren't sicker than me. I see the world for what it is, beyond the white and the black, the way the government downplays historical facts. Cause the United States sponsored the rise of the Third Reich, just like the CIA trained terrorists how to fight, build bombs and sneak box cutters onto a flight. When I was a child, the devil himself bought me a mic, but I refused the offer, cause God sent me to strike with skills unused like fallopian tubes in a dike. My words will expose George Bush and Bin Laden as two separate parts of the same seven-headed dragon. And you can't fathom the truth, so you don't hear me. You think Illuminati's just a fucking conspiracy theory? That's why conservative racists are all running shit, and your phone is tapped by the federal government. So I'm jamming frequencies in your brain when you speak to me. Technique, a ripper, rapper to pieces indecently. Pack weapons illegally, cause I'm never hesitant. Sniper scoping a commission, controlling the president. Father, forgive them, for they don't know right from wrong. The truth is set you free, written down in a song. And the song has the cause of death written in code. The word of God brought to light that'll save your soul. Save your soul, motherfucker. Save your soul. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I hacked the Pentagon for self-incriminating evidence of Republican-manufactured white powder pestilence. Marine Corps flak vest with the guns and ammo, spitting bars like a demon stuck inside a piano. Turn a Sambo into a soldier with just one line. So hear the truth about the system that'll fuck up your mind. They gave Al-Qaeda $6 billion in 1989 to 1992. And now the last chapters of Revelations are coming true. And I know a lot of people find it hard to swallow this, cause subliminal bigotry makes you hate my politics, but you act like America wouldn't destroy two buildings in a country that was sponsoring bombs dropped on our children. I was watching the towers, and though I wasn't the closest, I saw them crumble to the earth like they were full of explosives. And they thought nobody noticed the news report that they did about the bombs planted on the George Washington Bridge. Four non-Arabs arrested during the emergency, and then it disappeared from the news permanently. They dubbed the tape of Osama, and they said it was proof, jealous of our freedom. I can't believe you bought that excuse. Rocking a motherfucking flag don't make you a hero. Word to ground zero, the devil crept into heaven. God overslept on the 7th. The new world order was born on September 11th. Father, forgive them, for they don't know right from wrong. The truth is set you free, written down in a song. And the song has the cause of death written in code. The word of God brought to light that'll save your soul. Save your soul, motherfucker. Save your soul. And just so conservatives don't take it to heart, I don't think Bush did it, cause he isn't that smart. He's just a stupid puppet taking orders on his cell phone from the same people that sabotaged Senator Wellstone. The military industry got it popping and locking, looking for a way to justify the Wolfowitz doctrine. And as a matter of fact, Rumsfeld, now that I think back, without 9/11, you couldn't have a war in Iraq or a defense budget of world conquest proportions. Kill freedom of speech and revoke the right to abortion, tax cut extortion, a blessing to the wealthy and wicked. But you still have to answer to the Armageddon you scripted. And Dick Cheney, you fucking leech, tell him your plans about building your pipelines through Afghanistan and how Israeli troops train the Taliban in Pakistan. You might have some house niggas fooled, but I understand colonialism is sponsored by corporations. That's why Halliburton gets paid to rebuild nations. Tell me the truth, I don't scare into paralysis. I know the CIA saw Bin Laden on dialysis in 98 when he was top 10 for the FBI. Government ties is really why the government lies. Read it yourself instead of asking the government why, cause then the cause of death will cause the propaganda to die.